How are you feeling about the state of the stock market these days? On our Money Sense program today, staying the course and staying diversified. We'll get Money Sense going after this break. Hi there. Welcome to our Money Sense program. I'm your host, Brent Laux, joined today by Andrew Rodick. Andrew, you've heard on our program in the past. He's a registered portfolio manager with Q Wealth Partners. He's a partner of PWM Private Wealth Council. Andrew is a chartered investment manager, a certified international wealth manager, a fellow of the Canadian Securities Institute. He holds a master's degree in public policy, and he brings a wealth of experience to his work with clients on their financial journeys. Wow, that's quite the resume there, Andrew. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Brent. Appreciate it. It's always great to be here.
And you've got a fabulous topic for our listeners on our program. Every investor needs to hear this: staying the course and staying diversified when it comes to your investing. And Andrew, we've seen lots of headlines this year about volatility, tariffs, even talk of a melt up in markets. Now there's AI bubble talk, but April really stands out as a turning point, I think. Can you walk us through what happened and why staying invested mattered so much?
Yeah, I think April 2025, it's an interesting standpoint to use that as kind of, let's say, the inflection point in our year in some ways. It was one of the most volatile months in recent history, Brent. The S&P 500 dropped nearly 12% in just a few days after sweeping tariff announcements kind of triggered a fear of a global trade war. And then at one point, the broader U.S. market was actually down more than 20% from its February highs. It actually briefly entered a bear market territory intraday trading. So, you know, investors were understandably very nervous, and many sold out at those lows. You know, hopefully clients with financial advisors and guidance were not, but many sold out at lows thinking they were potentially protecting themselves.
I guess it's that old selling low and buying high mismatch here, I suspect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're right on track for sure. You know, here's the key, right? Just days later, as we kind of got through the tariff announcements, the administration then paused most of those tariffs and markets staggered a really dramatic rebound. On April 9th, the S&P 500 surged 9.5% in a single day, its biggest one-day gain in over a decade. By mid-May, the index had fully recovered, and by June, we were hitting new all-time highs again. When you talk about the all-time highs we've been experiencing kind of through the back half of the year, and really, even if you fast forward to today, year-to-date returns, and we've had a little bit of choppiness over the last, you know, week and a bit as people are digesting more and more AI news. But if we kind of look at the major equity categories, you know, and I'll give approximations here, but the S&P 500, the broader large cap U.S. Market, up about 14%. The NASDAQ 100 up over 23%. And that one driven, you know, primarily by AI and tech, as you mentioned. And I'm not talking even really international markets yet, right? You know, investors who had stayed the course have been rewarded. So those who sold during April's panic, they missed out on one of the fastest recoveries in history.
Boy, that's incredible. Some really impressive numbers. So the difference between staying invested and selling at the wrong time really could be huge. Do you have any numbers that show just how costly it can be to miss out on those big days?
We do. You know, Brent, I always know to bring the numbers, right? And, you know, JP Morgan put out some really interesting research that shows that 7 of the market's 10 best days typically occur within 2 weeks of the 10 worst days. So if you invested, I'll break this down into dollars, right? So if you invested $10,000 in the S&P 500 back in 2005, and you stayed invested through 2024, you'd have about $71,750 today.
Nice.
Yeah. Now, I'm just going to say that's if you stayed invested. If you missed just the 10 best days, though, your balance drops from that just over 71,000. It drops to 32,871.
Ouch.
So less than half, Brent. So you missed the 70, or sorry, now to take this a little bit further, you missed the 60 best days. You'd actually lose money. So this year was a textbook example. April's worst days were immediately followed by some of their best, and you want to capture those best days.
So staying invested matters, but what about diversification, Andrew? We've heard a lot about market concentration this year, especially with AI mega cap stocks really dominating the headlines.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, I know we've talked about it on previous shows. Market concentration is certainly at historic highs. The top 10 stocks now make up, you know, nearly 38% of the S&P 500. And eight of those are in many ways tied to AI. That's a lot of weight in just a handful of names. And while these companies have driven much of the market's gains, you know, concentration does create a risk. If one or two stumble, that can impact and have a ripple across portfolios. And that's why diversification across sectors, across geographies, and across asset classes. We've talked about this on previous shows, even themes and thematic investing. These can all be critical. And it's really, in some ways, your portfolio's seatbelt. When it feels like the car could be speeding out of control or folks are fearing a blown out tire.
Andrew, you'd mentioned diversification across geographies. Why is international diversification so important right now?
Right. So when we think about that, you know, and I'll use some research from Morningstar, it shows that while U.S. stocks have dominated for much of the past decade, leadership in terms of who's leading the pack, well, that can shift over time. In fact, actually, non-US stocks are outperforming US stocks so far in 2025 with the what we call the MSCI All Country World ex-US, excluding the United States. That index is up over 25% year to date. So international diversification, it matters because valuations overseas are actually in a lot of ways cheaper than what we're seeing in the U.S., which is really trading near the 95th percentile of historic valuation. So there's a lot of argument to be said about the high valuations here. And then also you have currency trends. Those can boost returns. So this year we've had a weaker U.S. dollar, and that's helped foreign stock investors. And then that geographic diversification can lead to general sector exposure, diversification. So non-US markets offer access to industries that are sometimes underrepresented in the US. That could be things like European luxury goods or even Asian manufacturing, for example.
We'll take a quick break. Andrew Rodick is my guest on this weekend's edition of Money Sense. We're talking about staying the course with your investments and staying diversified with our guest, Andrew Rodick, on Money Sense this week. Andrew, on a previous program, you mentioned some research, and I think it was from Morningstar as well, regarding diversification benefits and how that links to our returns. So what does their latest research say about risk-adjusted returns?
Well, Morningstar put out their 2025 diversification landscape report is what they call it. And it did still confirm that diversification is one of the few almost free lunches in investing. So combining assets with non-correlations where possible, you know, that can reduce volatility. Ideally, it can improve risk-adjusted returns. The analysis from Morningstar shows that a globally diversified portfolio, adding those developed and emerging markets, as well as other asset classes like bonds, commodities, and golds, it has historically delivered better risk-adjusted returns than an all-stock or all-equity portfolio would.
Andrew, earlier you mentioned that blown out tire. I suspect you're referring to the potential of a bubble in the markets. We're hearing about a melt up in markets heading towards the year end here. So what does that mean for investors, and how do they need to think about staying the course with this kind of a situation?
Yeah, so first off, the concept of a melt up, that term, if you're seeing headlines, you know, that more or less that is when markets are rising sharply. And often this is fueled by fear of missing out, or, you know, it's fueled by, let's call it, the animal spirits of the markets rather than the fundamentals. And right now, when we look at liquidity and buybacks and retail inflows, you know, there's a lot of, you know, late year rally that's happened, even with the choppiness of the last couple of weeks on the AI news. The S&P 500, you know, if you look at it from the April lows. If you go to the April lows, the S&P 500 is up over 30%. And again, tech stocks are leading that charge. And while that sounds great, it can also mean that valuations are stretched. There's a ratio. It's from Robert Shiller. It's called the CAPE ratio. It's an adjusted price to earnings valuation ratio. And right now it's sitting somewhere above 40. And that's a level we've only seen during, you know, things like the dot-com bubble. So again, when we think about staying diversified and disciplined, it potentially is more important than ever when we're looking at some of the valuation considerations.
You know, on that topic of valuations, I've been reading some articles recently. And of course, when you see something with Warren Buffett's name on it, it tends to jump out at you. He's often mentioned the market cap to GDP ratio as a key indicator. Can you speak to that for our listeners?
Yeah, it's a great question, Brent, because when you go back to your earlier question of the AI bubble, and when we think about bubbles, again, valuations are tied in there. And so this is an indicator, you know, affectionately known as the Buffett indicator, and it compares the total U.S. stock market value to the size of the total U.S. economy. That's the GDP piece, right? So historically, Buffett suggested that a ratio around 70 to 80%, that signals attractive valuations, while levels near, let's say, 200%, that means, I think his words were that investors are playing with fire. So right now, the ratio, and I know it's going to sound startling, you know, the ratio is actually sitting at 220% approximately.
Wow.
So that's, yeah, Brent, you know, this is one of the highest readings on record, you know, again, using this indicator. So to put that, you know, maybe in perspective, in terms of dollar numbers, if you look at the current total market cap, it's roughly $67 trillion in the U.S. markets. U.S. GDP is about $30.5 trillion. And so that's what gets you that Buffett indicator around that 220%. I think the last I had seen was, you know, 219.9 to be exact. Mm-hmm. And so, Brent, you know, this is well above the historical average of around about 120. And even higher than the peak before the dot-com bubble that I was talking about earlier. So this does suggest, if you use this indicator, it does suggest the market is potentially significantly overvalued relative to the total economy.
I was going to say, Andrew, that's beginning to sound like a warning sign. Should investors be a little worried now?
Not necessarily worried, but maybe caution is warranted here. High valuations don't actually predict that a correction is going to happen. But they do tell us that there is potentially an elevation in risk. And that doesn't mean we're going to face a correction just because the risk is elevated relative to the valuations and so on and so forth. You know, nothing is necessarily predictive in that way. But this is a data point. It's something to consider when we're looking at the market's overall valuations. And, you know, Buffett himself has said that this indicator is best used as a long-term risk gauge. It's not a timing tool, right? So for investors, what we're trying to reinforce is, again, the importance of diversification and discipline. You're seeing this indicator. Well, this is talking about the U.S. market valuation. Maybe markets are priced for perfection here. And so, you know, chasing returns at this point arguably could be dangerous. But this goes back to something we've talked about in previous shows. You know, are you sticking to your plan? Are you rebalancing when needed? Are you avoiding concentrated bets? And I'm just going to add one more thing here. You know, Warren Buffett actually, he's retiring, you know, handing over the reins of Berkshire after all these years. He's 95 years of age now. And he actually just put out, people are calling it his final letter, but it's, you know, it's a letter around Thanksgiving that he's putting out here because he's not going to do the annual reporting letters. And he talked about Greg Abel, a Canadian who's actually going to become the boss, so to speak, at year end of Berkshire. And, you know, when you look at all the things he talked about, you know, he wasn't talking about predictive analysis on where things are going. He was talking in this final letter about all the other, you know, matters of his life and his career, and that he thinks Berkshire's in good hands. And when you look at some of the letters he's put out historically, he talks about investing fundamentals in many of his shareholder letters. And something he put out in a previous letter, I'll just share it really quickly. The stock market serves as a reallocation center at which money is moved from the active to the patient. So when we talk about staying invested, staying diversified, you know, there's the words of Warren Buffett himself.
So the advice is still stay the course and stay diversified.
Exactly. And valuations, you know, they can remain high for years, Brent, especially in low interest rate environments or during tech-driven growth phases like what we're seeing now. So, you know, when we think about history here, you know, fundamentals still matter. A diversified portfolio, again, going back to what I was talking about earlier, you know, do you have the right sector exposure, regional exposure, asset classes? Because that's going to help manage your risk. And when we're thinking about valuation risks, you know, valuation right now, we're talking a lot about the stock market. Well, what's your fixed income allocation? What's your alternative asset allocation? And then really, what's your personal risk profile? So, you know, is your portfolio diversified to align with your risk profile, your overall financial plan, and your financial goals long term?
So, Andrew, to sum up, staying the course during volatility and maintaining diversification are key to one's long-term success. Any final thoughts for our listeners today?
Yes, I think the other piece I would add here, you know, we've talked a lot about valuations on the show today. Again, I mentioned earlier the last couple of weeks, we've seen some additional volatility because folks are trying to figure out, you know, is this an AI bubble or not? We just got the earnings report from NVIDIA. It was released kind of late on November 19th, and it led to kind of a pop coming out of that because NVIDIA beat their forecasted earnings. And so, you know, this now is a question mark of, okay, is there going to be too much concentration in these AI darlings as NVIDIA continues to have good earnings? And is that creating or building on an asset bubble? And then, of course, people think bubbles can burst. And that's a concern. And well, yes, bubbles can burst. And history has shown us many asset bubbles over time. And history has also shown us that markets recover. That's part of this as well. So trying to time the market is often going to backfire. But if you're focusing on your long-term goals, if you're staying diversified across asset types as well, and you're resisting the urge to panic sell or overreact to market whims, you know, that's how you protect and that's how you grow your wealth over time.
Interesting program. Thanks for all this information today, Andrew. And for listeners who want to learn more, perhaps review their investment holdings or refresh their financial plan, how can they reach out and get in touch?
As always, for more information about PWM or how to arrange a complimentary review of your portfolio or maybe your refresh, like you said, of your financial plan, you can visit our website at pwmprivatewealth.com or you can call or you can text the office at 306-975-9500. This is our main line, yes, but it's also our text line if that's easier for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you've been enjoying the show, we'd be truly grateful if you could drop us a quick review or rating on Spotify. It's a wonderful way to help more people find us and to share what you love most about our shows. And I would say to any listeners out there, if there's a topic that you're excited for us to explore or shed some light on in future episodes, please feel free to call, text, or email us whenever you'd like. We're always excited to hear that sort of feedback from listeners.
Thanks so much for your time this weekend, Andrew.
My pleasure, Brent. Thank you.
This is Money Sense. Financial planning services are offered through PWM Private Wealth Council. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. PWM Private Wealth Council is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. You've been listening to Money Sense.